We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, everybody, to the Thursday RotoWire MLB Industry Podcast. If I don't look like Jeff Erickson, it's because I'm not. This is Todd Zolder here, pinch hitting. Jeff is visiting some family. I guess he went to a game, playoff game. Saw some stuff on Twitter. Good for Jeff. So I'm here with someone you may recognize, a friend and colleague, Ron Chandler. It's actually kind of doubly glad to be talking to you today because it means you made it through the, at least, you know, through the storm, this one anyway, unscathed.
Yeah, pretty much. Luckily, we're on the east coast of Florida, so we didn't get hit with the brunt of it. We had a bunch of wind, probably, well, we were expecting about 50-mile-an-hour winds, with the storm kind of went a little bit further south, so we had more like 60-65-mile-an-hour winds. But we've been through stuff like that before, and a few down branches, but for the most part, no injuries, no damages. We're good to go here.
Excellent. You know, thinking good thoughts to those that maybe weren't so lucky. Right. And there's still some people about to get hit with some rain, et cetera, coming up. So, I mean, you know, living in New England, what do I deal with? You know, hunkering down for an occasional blizzard, dealing with some unruly Red Sox fans.
Well, that's not nothing.
You know, it's you know, I don't have alligators or snakes or that shark that always seems to show up during these tropical storms. But anyway, you know, I mean, you know, it hasn't been the greatest summer for me, talking, you know, my Red Sox roots, but yeah. The other hand, you can tell by your outfit that it's been all right for Mets fans.
It has been so much fun. I haven't had this much fun being a Mets fan in who knows how long. It's you know, this is like the first time that you know, ownership has taken an interest in the team and is investing in the team, and for the long term, not just for patchwork and band-aids and stuff. And it's just been so much fun riding this out.
Yeah, of course. You know, nowadays you get to watch nearly every single game, unless it's one of those silly streaming channels. But that's a podcast for another day. You also you live near an affiliate that's had a pretty good season too.
Yeah. I'm in Port St. Lucie, so the low class A St. Lucie Mets won the Florida State League championship last week, which was fun to watch and go to, and an experience with the local team here. So yeah, all in all, it's been a great year to be a Mets fan.
Yeah. I you know, from a, you know, fantasy point of view, watching the team, I got burned with Eduardo Escobar. I'm a fan of the old guys. We know that, mm-hmm. You know, release him at the end of August because he's losing playing time to Brett Beatty. And now he's on, player, I think player of the month will probably go to one of two other people, unless mm-hmm. they both get it. But yeah. Even so, the point being, Escobar has really turned it around. But you mentioned the minor league playoffs. That means playoffs are over, or the minor league season's over, very, very close to, and time to start. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Time to start working on those MLEs and soon enough park factors. But
Oh, yeah.
You've long since passed the keys to that engine to Ray Murphy at HQ. But you still have to think about these. You still have to think about, I know your Babs, you have a different approach, but we have a draft. Knock on wood. I've had to say that for a few years, not this year. We have a draft, an XFL auction, a little over a month?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fast approaching, and we're both going to have to make some decisions it's a keeper league, so obviously that affects it. Based on some new rules, based on some new MLB rules. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a lot of research posted in the next several months about how it's going to affect things, but not by the time either of us put our first bid out in 5 weeks. So have you thought much about how you're going to adjust your plan or even player evaluations for the XFL?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, it's hard to draw any firm conclusions based upon speculating what these new rules might mean next year. I mean, we talk about how maybe there'll be an increase in stolen bases. Maybe certain types of pitches will be more affected by the lack of the shift. For me personally, you know, the one player on my team that I'm going to have a harder time deciding whether to keep or not, oddly enough, is Max Fried. Because in the back of my mind, I think that with the lack of shifting, ground ball pitchers might be more prone to giving up more hits. And Fried doesn't strike out a lot of guys. He's more of a ground ball guy. And at the keeper price I'd have him in, which would be $21, I don't know. Now it's more of a decision. You know, before the rules were finalized, I was thinking definitely Fried will be a keeper of mine. Now I have to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm going to jump right up to what I was going to talk about third as far as rules. But with Fried, he may be facing a easier aggregate of opposing batters. We don't know for sure because we don't know how things play out in offseason trades, but at least on paper, the AL and the NL East have the toughest divisions and the most hitter-friendly parks. So there's a chance that the opposing aggregate of hitters is a little softer. Have you thought about that? Is that going to be to me? I think this is, I can't say how it's going to play out, but you know, spoiler, this is the thing I think is the biggest factor in 2023 evaluations is how the pitching is going to change in a few divisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it's hard to play out. And I typically don't try to draw conclusions on that stuff until after all the free agents are signed and the trades are made, because so much is going to happen between now and, you know, opening of spring camps that it may change everything we think about these divisions. So especially for a draft that's going to occur the first weekend in November, I don't think I'm going to make too major change in my evaluations and hopefully fix any mistakes when we do our reserve draft in March.
Yeah. Before we go on, I need to thank our friends from SoRare for sponsoring this podcast for us. We'll talk a little bit more about them in a bit. But yeah, I kind of alluded to it. The shift. I think there's going to be a ton of articles, both in general and in specific players. This guy's going to be hindered by it. This guy's going to be helped by it. I'm not, you know, maybe people are looking for me for the names. They're not going to get them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's going to be as big of a difference. I think in the overall it will, but I don't think we're going to be able to pinpoint players. And if we can, you know, so much variance occurs on batted balls that a good or bad effect is going to be masked anyway. It could be anyway. We could be misreading the data, you know, due to variance.
It's true. And, you know, as much as we're looking at the rule change with the shift as being sort of a very fixed positioning of the fielders, I mean, that shortstop can be standing right next to second base. That right fielder could be coming in a little bit. You know, the effect, net effect might not be all that big.
Exactly. I wrote about it for ESPN this past week. People are going to make these assumptions based upon where they think fielders would be, what they think the batter's approach will be, and what they think the pitcher's approach will be. Those aren't going to be the same as they were this year. We don't know that. Mm-hmm. So if I can find somebody who is sure that somebody is going to hit 20 higher points on their batting average, and I have them on my team in a keeper league, they can, you know, I'll find grounds to, you know, to deal them, and vice versa. Sure. You know, absolutely. You know, so I think that there's going to be a way that it's going to be a way to get a little bit of a scoop early, put a player out there, put a, I don't want to say Joey Gallo, cause he's kind of an extreme, put a lefty pull hitter out for trade and see what kind of offers you get. See if people are taking this to the extreme. Something you can do in keeper leagues, but the pitch clock, you kind of alluded to stolen bases. Have you seen it wasn't at the level you were at, right? The games you saw, they didn't use the pitch.
We had the pitch.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you notice a difference? I mean, it was.
The difference was funny. I have to tell you a quick story. My wife works the ticket booth at the stadium at St. Lucie. And what would normally happen is I'd go to a game, probably come in maybe the second or third inning because I was busy, I was working, whatnot. And I'd say to her, okay, when you're done working, come on up and we'll have a beer together. So she'd usually get up there around the fifth or sixth inning and we'd have a beer and watch the rest of the game. Since they instituted the pitch clock, by the time she gets off of work, it's already the eighth inning and they've already closed the bars. So...
Oh, well, you know, it's you have the, so you switch to wine at home.
Yeah.
That's not as big of a deal, but that's games, it. Yeah, that's funny.
The games are going quicker. Yes, for sure.
I mean, we've seen it in the AFL and of course these pitchers are more accustomed to it. It may have a difference. The bases, I don't know that's going to be all that much of a difference, but I mean, it's only going to happen a few times and I'm not going to change any fantasy rankings, but I think there's going to be some cat and mouse, and it's going to be more fun than anything. A pitcher throws over twice. So the third time, you can pick him off. He's going to be out.
Yep.
But if he's not out, it's a balk. So now the batter, how big of a lead can I get? You know, I mean, he has to get me. But I can't go too much. But, you know, I think, you know, then it's the pitcher has to think, do I have a better chance of picking him off? Or does my catcher have a better chance of catching him stealing? So, I mean, it might happen five times all year. But I think that's going to be a fun cat and mouse.
That's fun. Yeah.
You know, who knows if I'll even be happy to catch those games, but it's an interesting dynamic. So looking forward to the XFL in first time since when that we've been live? It's been at least 2 years that we did it remote.
Yeah. The last year we did it live was 2019.
Yeah. And remote gets the job done, but there's nothing, especially this XFL group. Any group, you know, any group of friends gets together. It's great. So we're looking forward to that. But this XFL auction comes on the heels of, I don't want to call it heated. We've had heated exchanges in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Rules. But I think this is a little bit calmer. Mm-hmm. But we discussed a few rules. So first, before we, you know, some of the specifics, I may be the hands, but, you're the brains of this league. And, you know, how would you sort of recommend for commissioners and SWATs to, you know, open the floor for rules discussions, but not let it get too out of hand?
Yeah. Well, with this group, we've had that on occasion, as you've mentioned. It's, you know, I've always tried to run my leagues through a democratic process. I mean, going way back to when Tout Wars was first started and we were trying to craft a constitution, everything was put up to a vote. And I've done the same thing with the XFL. Usually during the summer, I put out a call for any potential rule changes. And I don't try to vet them or anything. I put them all out for a vote. And, the 15 guys get to discuss. And then I just watch. I kind of sit back usually for the most part and see where the discussion is going. If it reaches a point where either we're starting to get redundancies of arguments or things are getting a little heated, I'll typically pull it back and say, okay, let's put this up for another vote or let's kind of make a decision or pass or table it, which we did this year with one of the rules we've tabled. So it's just a matter of keeping things civil. But I found it a really good way to craft rules and have everybody have a say in it.
Right. I think having done it for so many years and being so used to this group, it helps. But I mean, I'm in leagues where, you know, you don't even have the opportunity to argue rules. And I'm in one league that we're still arguing about a rules change for a league 3 years ago. So they just know, they never know when to stop. They never know when to, you know, call it for a vote. So that's you know, a little bit of hyperbole there, but I think you found it, you know, a good way to, and like one of the things I like and kind of learned is if you need to, you know, if we're kind of stuck or other ideas have come up on a specific vote, you'll stop it and you'll adjust the vote. Okay, let's now vote on this. Mm-hmm. And once we know this, we can steer it back to this, you know, and get right to the, and land on the ultimate answer. And that's something I, you know, it comes from experience, but it's something people should at least consider.
Yeah, I mean, I think on this year, the specific item up for vote was whether or not we should allow any prep materials at the draft table, which historically for the XFL, from day one, basically, I like to call it we draft naked. All we have at the draft table is just a set of depth charts. And perhaps for personal reasons and whatnot, I know, we've been doing this now for 20 years, that my memory isn't the same it was back in 2002, and can remember, I used to be able to recite all 25 man rosters off the top of my head, and that those days are long gone. But to sit down at the table without having some idea of the players targeting, this has gotten really hard. So I thought, well, maybe we should allow some type of markings on these depth charts. And so I put it out just to see what the vote was. And we started getting into the weeds as to what types of markings on the depth charts. So I pulled it back and I said, okay, let's just do a yes, no markings or no markings. If we decide we're going to do markings, then we can figure out what types of markings will be advisable or permissible. And that's how we proceeded with that.
Right. So I know Jeff and I talk about the league a lot, but for those that don't know, it's a hybrid keeper dynasty league. So there are some very good players still available. And then in the last minor leaguer that you would expect, he's gone. I mean, we draft high schoolers in this league. So it's a nice hybrid. And anybody who appeared in the MLB or end of the season on an organization is eligible. So we know the pool. But, and as Ron suggested, all we do is we have the depth charts of each. And if a player's been drafted or a player's been kept, it is a strike through. So everybody knows the pool going in because everybody at least could look up who played. And it's been, I got some things I jot down as soon as I get the lists. I think because we can do some markings, I will probably take advantage. But I might have a little bit of an advantage because I make the lists and they're kind of fresh. And, I've always felt guilty about, I know what they are, but on the other hand, I've always asked anybody in the league who wants to look at them and find mistakes to do so. So mm-hmm. Everybody's had access
right
from day one. Now, not everybody's taken advantage. So I kind of, that guilt has kind of been appeased a bit, but I can see where we should allow limited markings. And I try on my end, if everybody's marking multiple eligibility players, I said, you know what? I can take care of that.
Yeah.
Let's just have a list of multiple eligibility players.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Let's not have that to be a, if that's what they're doing. I can't mark everybody who, can't mark your targets. I can't mark the guys that someone though thinks is going to have a better BABIP. But anyway, so it's worked out well. Worked out well. What were the other rules that we talked about?
Well, the one that we tabled was how to determine rookie eligibility, eligibility, right? So the existing rule was that once a batter exceeded 50 at-bats or a pitcher exceeded 20 innings pitched, they had lose their farm eligibility. And the proposal was to increase those benchmarks to 100 at-bats and 40 innings pitched. And the vote came down to a 50-50 split. And they were very strong arguments on both sides. And it was the type of thing that, given that we were near the end of the season, we would have to start making our keeper decisions now. And the rule wouldn't take effect till 2023 anyway. I decided to table it. And we'll probably bring it up again over the winter and try to figure out what makes most sense. But a lot of strong opinions on that one.
Right. And it may seem, just a few at bats here, but I think the place that it manifests most is in your actual keeper list, that we separated between people that are in the auction because they've exceeded the limits and those you can freeze as a farm player. And you're allowed 15 combined, right? There's not, well, 10 of the and five of the, it's 15 combined. So some of us over the years have had to use an auction spot on someone who did use up their farm eligibility, but maybe weren't going to be a competitor on your team, your active roster the following year, but in 2 or 3 years, because the acceleration is so plus $3, in 3 years this guy's going to be good, but maybe not this year, or 2 years. So I think that's one of the main repercussion, and that I think is important because people have built their teams using the rule that's in place, and it does alter the ability to, you know, restock, if you will. And I think that was one of some of the arguments where we're under this particular culture to change the rule changes the culture. And it, you know, I know that you try to vote on a rule that helps your team, helps the league, not your team. Mm-hmm. But it was difficult in this case because, you know, this is such a, you know, it affected rosters so much that I think, and I, even though I think it one and the same, helping the rule and helping the team, voting to not increase the limits kind of helped my team. And I still think it's a little bit better for the league, but I you know, that seems like a lame argument, you know, but
it's, you know, it's hard because there's always an inherent bias in deciding on these rules. And had we decided last year to increase the limit to 100 at-bats and 40 innings pitch, that would have had a huge effect on my keeper decisions for this year, because nearly every one of my farm players, except one or two, have between 50 and 100 at-bats this year. So I'm going to have a whole bunch of second-year players on my active roster who normally I would have preferred to keep in my farm system, because it's either keep them or drop them when you only have 15 spots to work with. So it's it's quite a consideration.
Yeah, and it's the opportunity cost of not being able to put someone in that spot. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a $1 flyer, to me that's what, you know, especially in this league, it's where, you know, at the end, I wish I had a spot for him. Wish only $3, man, I pay eight as any keeper league. But so I think tabling it's the wise idea, because I think happened is I think some of these arguments came up after people made their decision, and it's kind of best if they now know what to think about and rethink it, and we'll talk about it again. Plus, we've had a little turnover lately, mm-hmm. so I think it's also good to let some of the freshmen and sophomores live the league a year or two before they make a decision.
Yeah, it's true.
So anyway, I think with the right call was made at that point. But what was I? That's what I was going to do is rethank our friends from Solaire. Solaire is an MLB NFT-based free-to-play baseball game played with officially licensed Major League Baseball cards. Sign up today at Solaire.com/MLB, and you'll receive 13 common cards to start your collection. Build 7-player lineups from cards in your collection and play weekly competitions with scoring based on real-life player performance. Compete for rewards with other fans around the world. For more information on gameplay and to sign up, visit Solaire.com/MLB. There's no better time to join than now ahead of our postseason gameplay. On a gratuitous note, I'm writing a column for RotoWire on Solaire. I've been playing. It's not so much Ozola's getting into NFTs and stuff. It's the crux of the game is knowing baseball, is finding players that you think are going to do better. So that's my approach. So I know there's people that are like, oh, not NFTs. But I'm playing it from the baseball point of view, and it's kind of fun.
Well, what Solaire should do from a marketing perspective is instead of playing one of their games with cards, they should get the actual players to come get a couple of players and actually involved. Yeah.
Who's to say they won't? Apparently their nation, people on Twitter hooking up with me, and I guess it's big in soccer, mm-hmm. which I was a little bit ahead behind my time as far as that before it grew in popularity in the States. I know Jeff's into soccer, some other, it's not never been one of my things, but I guess it's big in soccer as well. But anyway, we talked to you about, you know, your enjoyment this summer about following the Mets and following mm-hmm. the minor league teams, and a little bit about the XFL, but you decided to take the year off from labor and tout. We don't, mm-hmm. We don't need to get into this sort, why. But I, it's having done this for so long, it's like, I would miss this. What have you missed about it? What have you not missed about it? How has the summer been not being involved in two of these leagues that you've been involved in for 20 years?
Yeah. Well, I actually would like to talk about the why,
because all right.
That,
okay.
Yeah, because that really is the reason that answers your question, basically. And after I won the labor mixed league in 2021, yeah, last year, after I won that, I just really had a long time deciding whether I wanted to keep doing it. And in the end, I decided I wanted to leave both labor and tout wars. And there were a couple of reasons. And it starts actually with our good friend, Laura Michaels, who said to me once several years back, a few years before he passed, he was having some major health problems. And I asked him, I said, Laura, you know, with everything that you're doing, competing in these high level leagues and writing every day and playing your band and all that stuff, how long do you continue to keep on doing this? And he said to me, he says, well, until it's not fun anymore. Which really struck home with me. And, you know, I think back to my first fantasy league back in the 1984. And I've always done this for fun. I've always done this for you know, the intellectual challenge and the camaraderie, but at its core, it's always been for fun. And when I joined labor and tout wars, again, it was for fun. And also the community that we were building, which was really important to me too. But over the years, I kind of think things have changed a little bit for me. The explosive growth of the industry has had an impact on maintaining the intimate, close-knit nature of what these leagues used to be. And that was inevitable, you know, with growth that happens. And then the pandemic just kind of put a stake through the whole thing, through my whole enjoyment. Online drafts took away a lot of the connection I felt to the other folks in my leagues. And it got to the point where I was in tout and labor with a lot of these writers who I just did not know. And had we been in a room together, I would have gotten to know them. We would have, you know, shared a beer together, had a meal, whatnot. And even with Zoom, it just wasn't the same. But without that connection, it just wasn't fun for me. It lost a lot of that. So, you know, I don't play in online leagues typically because I don't like playing against a bunch of strangers. And it almost had gotten to that point that I was feeling that way. So, you know, I've always seen fantasy as a social game. And to be honest, it just wasn't fun for me anymore participating in tout and labor. Now, coming back, going lot, you know, being able to draft in a room together, you know, next year, yeah, I've kept the door open. I hope I'll come back. But then there's a second element that played into this whole decision, and that's the fact that at this stage in my life now, I enjoy traveling a lot, and I don't want my success in these leagues to hinge on being able to get my fab bids in on time mm-hmm. each week. You know, this summer I knew I had a trip coming up to Alaska, and I didn't want to be hiking Denali and worrying whether, you know, one of my players was had gotten hurt. So, I don't know. It might lead me eventually back to maybe the draft and hold league, or you know, play a bunch of what you call it,
best ball.
Or even DFS, you know, I'll probably still I'll do that. But right now, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next year. That's kind of what I missed and what, you know, I hope to get back. But that's really what it all came down to.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
No, I can relate to, you know, a lot of those areas. In that, you know, playing for fun, yes, that is what I'm into the most, but this is still how I make my living. And a lot of my personal clientele and RotoWire are in the high stakes arena. So in order to have any kind of credibility, I got to play in it. Wow. Now there was a time where I had high stakes arena entry money. And I did all right. I didn't do great. I did all right. Held my own. But now I'm only able to dabble now. But you know, and you kind of mentioned the influx of new people in the industry. There's a lot of these people that are playing high stakes. So there was a time where I was kind of the exception, not the rule, as far as participants. So it is kind of a conundrum. And you know, further, I mean, something I think you can relate to too is. The more I know about projections, mm-hmm. The less I understand their relevancy. But yet, that's what the high stakes people want from me. We want right. Where are your rankings, Ola? You know, they want my rest of season projections on September 1st. What? That's just talk about a waste of time. So I have had to find that connection. You may not be as plugged in, but to this sort of thing. But one thing I've kind of noticed, you talked about the pandemic. I think there was a huge influx of people coming into the industry, providing content because they had all this time.
Yeah.
And consumers had all this time to consume it. And I think we're finding that there's a lot of people that are, and now that their jobs are back in full force and maybe they had a kid over the pandemic, that there's a lot of people now dropping out of the industry too. I respect those folks for doing that. But, you know, from my end, with all these new people in, it's tougher and tougher to come up with something unique that, darn it, you know, Zim wrote, you know, Jeff Zimmerman already wrote about this. Sporer already did this.
Yeah.
You know, some good people. It's getting tough to do that sort of thing. But you're still providing content. You're still doing your Babs.
Yep.
And that, I think, is in its own lane. I think people may, you know, pretend they've come up with something new, and I'm going to go on, you know, general looking at a player, but it's Babs. So is Babs coming back? Is she coming back for 2023?
Oh, sure. Yeah, she'll be back. Not quite sure what form. Most likely it'll be running the same as we did last year. I don't anticipate a lot of changes. We added some new features last year that went really well. More of a quantification of risk, which our readers tended to like.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole idea of building a roster as a balance sheet of assets and liabilities, and being able to evaluate each player not only as what he brings to the table, but the risk that he also brings, and having a budget for that risk when building your roster is something that I think a lot of people understand. And also, like you said, the fact that projections aren't the be-all and end-all, and Babs is all about just looking at underlying skills and not trying to attach a number to it. So I think there's a strong argument for evaluating players that way and not being tied to specific rankings. Research we've shown that the ADPs are historically inaccurate when trying to actually project what players are going to do. So I think perhaps more and more people start gravitating towards a system that doesn't put as much of an emphasis on specific rankings, but ranking skills rather than ranking players.
Exactly. I've done looking at ADPs, and I need to repeat this, but I found that a so-called value pick, more often than not, is not a value pick. Mm-hmm. In a reach, more often than not, works out.
Yeah.
So, I mentioned I play in a lot of leagues. I know one of the things I don't do as well as others is grind in season, but I'm undefeated. I've won every single draft I've ever been in.
Haven't we all?
Yeah. I may have won whatever 5% of the leagues, probably mm-hmm. even fewer than that, but I've never lost a draft. I need to do some work on why, and still plan on doing that sort of thing. But we alluded to the new blood in the industry. It's not all good. There's still, quantity doesn't always equal quality. Mm-hmm. But I think I was very excited about the new people coming to First Pitch Arizona last year, both in terms of speakers and sort of younger audience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that transcends. I don't know if Ray and Brent, you saw the same thing, but from where I was sitting, I think the industry is in a good place.
Yeah, for sure. And there are going to be a ton of these folks back in Arizona in a few weeks, First Pitch Arizona. And in fact, I was just on a call with Ray and Brent earlier today talking about the programming for the conference. And as gets tougher and tougher every year is trying to find opportunities for everybody who wants to participate and speak. And so it's, panel discussions, you can get three or four people on a panel. Breakouts, there are just so many hours in the day to schedule breakouts. So, you look for maybe putting together a mock draft of some sort so people could participate. But there are so many people now who are doing really good work in the industry. You want to give them an opportunity to show their voice in a venue like First Pitch Arizona, which is a great event that allows people to really show what they have.
Yeah. I've been speaking for how many years, 15, 20, whatever it might be, not quite 20. And I used to wait and go, well, please put me on the pitchers panel. Please put me on the hitters panel. That's the prestigious panels now. I hope that Brent and Ray and you kind of took me up on it. I said, I've been doing this a while now. Let someone else get the spotlight. I'll moderate, or I'll run, I'll do something in the background. I don't need the spotlight anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you still need people, veterans on each panel as a balance, mm-hmm. but I'd like to, let's get some of these new people that know their stuff on some of the premier panels. I think that would be a great for both them and the content in general. This year is a little different. We have a home run derby to go to. I love the games, and I'm not going to come down before as early as I normally, I can't stay as late as I normally do. So I'm going to miss going to the games, but I can see hanging out I think hanging out at a home run derby is going to be pretty fun.
Yeah. It's the first time they're doing it this year.
Yeah.
The conference is November 3rd through 6th. Registrations are open at baseballhq.com, but they've always had the Fall Stars game, which they're moving to Sunday night this year. basically because of the World Series. Now,
right,
that the season was all shifted, the World Series Game 7 would be that Saturday. So they don't even know right now what time the Home Run Derby is going to start, because it depends upon when the World Series Game 7 would start, presumably. So a lot of stuff still up in the air, and that affects the scheduling for the program for the conference, too. We've been juggling balls now for weeks. I'm going to be very curious which players participate in the Home Run Derby, because that'll be a key to who we should be looking at, you know, for next year.
I talked about my ESPN article. I kind of included that. I said, we don't care who wins the Home Run Derby, but pay attention. You want to, it's a great chance to get to know who you're going to be drafting on your keeper lists in dynasty formats as well. Get a head start. I mean, you know what I alluded to it. And I tell the story all the time. Was with, you know, Jason Gray first game. I don't know if the first time I met him was close to it. We were in Scottsdale Stadium, and I, you know, not everybody's going to know about this, but there's a berm in left field and a set of trees. And we're kind of just talking, and some guy hit a ball over those trees. 700 home runs later, he's about to retire.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were how many people at that conference? 80, 90? So something 80 or like 90 that. Of us had Albert Pujols on our draft list that year. You know, 3 million other people didn't, you know. So,
yeah. Who was that third baseman on the Cardinals? And how do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Pujols?
Whatever, you know. So yeah, no, but you know, we've gone on to see other players as well. But you talked about fostering the community earlier, part of what made me, I think that, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, you know, first pitch is one of the elements that has done this, I think, anyway. And I'm kind of glad that football, our friend Bob Long, is kind of mimicking these sort of things over the summer, Canton Hall of Fame. But I think it's such a great model that it's, you know, baseball being the first, it's nice to be ahead of football for a change. Mm-hmm. But it's the model that it's fostered, and we're talking a live tout wars coming up. We haven't drafted live in tout wars for, again, the same number of years as
last one was 2019 as well. We canceled a week before the live draft in 2020.
And this year, to be fair, it had more to do with the lockout than the pandemic.
All right.
But you know, hopefully we can get back to drafting live, because it is to me, again, more about the camaraderie. And I know that, you know, the high stakes, we pair up with the high stakes community when we go to tout wars. There's a lot of crossover, but it still should be about about the fun anyway. So being, you know, it's been fun talking to you, Ron.
This has been great.
Yeah. I don't know if you've got anything else on your mind you'd like to share. We try to keep these to around 40-45 minutes. Mm-hmm. As opposed to our friend Patrick Davitt, who likes to put 4-hour podcasts out there.
Oh my god.
I'm no PD, I'm sorry. Mr. Smooth. I'm no Patrick.
No, he's good for sure, but those podcasts are very long. I do a lot of fast forwarding. I hate to say it, but other than what we've talked about, I probably just want to mention that I'm in the home stretch now of writing a book that's not The Baseball Forecaster. It's actually a historical memoir tentatively entitled Fantasy Expert, which tracks the history of the fantasy baseball industry from its beginnings through the early to mid 2000s, focusing specifically on the people who were its first set of experts. We look at Bill James and John Benson and Alex Patton and Peter Kreutzer, and the very first, have a chapter on the very first labor league and how we created tout wars, and First Pitch Arizona's in there. And the first time we got to really know Todd Zola could handle a crowd at a First Pitch Forum in Boston, which kind of blew me and Rick Wilton away. It was a fun book to write. In fact, I'm in negotiations with a publisher right now, and hopefully we'll be able to lock that down and have that out sooner rather than later. But you can look forward to that too.
Excellent. No, I'm very, very excited about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned the forecaster. It's, This is the calm before, well, oh man, this is the wrong time for this expression. The calm before the storm, this is my kind of off week as well. I mean, it's projection time sooner than later. But you guys, I mean, probably in between first pitch discussions, I assume you're already laying out the plans, you know, who's doing what for the forecaster. You've already got the cover.
Yep. Cover's done. Yeah, with our meetings now are weekly, and we talk about the progress for the book, and we've assigned out all the writers who are going to be do the player commentaries. We're assembling the research articles. My task every year is putting together and updating the encyclopedia part of the book, as well as writing the introduction. So, things have been well underway with the book now for almost a month already. So, busy time of year for us all.
What number year is it?
37, I think. Yeah, 37. I should know that because it's the same number of years I've been married, but one or the other, I forget.
This thing, people listen to this. We're not, you know.
Yeah.
And if they don't hear it directly, they can get a text or something.
I think my wife actually will be listening to this after we're done. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I'll give a final thanks to Serrera, our sponsor. And again, thank Ron. And again, glad that you're safe and sound. Yep. And good wishes to everybody else that's dealing with a little bit more right now. And tomorrow, I guess it'll be me that's back with Clay Link. Can't say two starters though, because there's no two starts next week. But I'm sure Clay and I will find something to talk about. Thanks everybody, and good luck taking it on home.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.